The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey, everybody, coming to you cordless. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 minutes after 2 p.m. in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis, it's 2 minutes after 10 p.m. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. It's the start of our 12th week, and I forgot to look at what the episode count. I think this is 46 or 47. I'm not sure. Which means we should be hitting 50 pretty soon. Whoopee. Hope you had a good weekend. It's warm here, relatively speaking. It hit 50 today. They're telling us it's going to be warm, relatively warm for the next 2 weeks. And also the weather, whatever the hell. What's it, the weather department? What is it called? The Weather Bureau of the United States is telling us that we're going to have maybe a warmer than average winter, and I'm certainly okay with that. I am. Okay, so what's going on here? I'll tell you what's going on. We don't have a guest tonight. I'm going to yak. I do that. And you can yak with me. You can call up. Oh, I didn't. Hold it just a second. I didn't actually put it on the screen. That's terrible. Let's do this. How about that? Did you see that? Look at that. Okay, so you can call up. You go to this number right here. Not a number, it's a web page, jimandnight.com/call. If you go to jimandnight.com, you can press call in at the top menu. It'll take you to the same page. And you're saying, well, Jim, why do I need to access a web page to call you? It's because, silly, we take video phone calls here. And we have this whole thing set up. You don't have to download any software. You don't have to boot up your Zoom meeting. None of that crap. All you do is you go to that web page. There's a giant blue button at the top of the screen. You click that button. You're in our preview screen. You're in the preview area, the virtual green room. You get to check your camera and mic, get the crap out of your teeth, all that sort of stuff. You press join at the bottom, and you're in the queue. It's really simple. I ask every single person who calls how simple it is. David from San Francisco said it was harder to find our website than it was to call in. And he's right. It is. He's absolutely right. It's simple as pie. Also, I have to point this out. For those of you trollers who like to get on the internet and do shit because it's anonymous, well, first of all, fuck you. You're making life miserable for everybody. But besides that, you don't have to put your face on the screen. When you get to the preview page, there's a pull-down to choose your camera. Even if you only have one camera, the pull-down's still there. And the other alternate, the last thing on the list is no video. You can click that, and it will mute your camera, whatever the hell it's called, disabled or something like, I don't know, something like that. It'll do that. Yes, it's modern technology. We're sending people to the moon, people. We're doing that again, you know? Do you realize we made those flights? The quote-unquote computer on the Apollo spacecraft was basically just what will now be a $5 handheld calculator. It had 2K of memory. Yeah, now not 2 megs, 2K. And there was in that movie they were bragging about the fact they had a whole room full of equipment and they had 2 megs of memory in there. Holy shit. I still don't understand how we get half a terabyte of memory and a little stick. I gotta admit. I mean, I understand how it's done, but still, it boggles my mind. And also, they can do it so often. I don't know if you guys know this, but at the Intel factory, about 2/3 of the chips they manufacture, the CPU chips don't work. But 1/3 of them do. It's like, holy shit. You know, and you're talking about nanometers of space between those little tiny little transistors. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, David Strom wrote a piece, his Sunday Smiles column, which he was on Thursday. We had to thank him. We had a great talk. It was wonderful. I'm going to reference something he talked about earlier, too. About you know, he's talking about lately doing what we do, which would be, I guess, the conservative media is a little depressing. But still, you know, the fact of the matter is, like he said, you know, and I was telling a friend of mine today, you have a piece of glass in your pocket that has more computing power than the entire U.S. government had 30 years ago. It's what's happening in terms of technology is mind-boggling. Now we're going to have AI is going to apparently rule our lives. I don't know too much about this, relatively speaking. I'm a computer programmer. You know, I can run web servers till I'm blue in the face. I'm really good at it. The AI thing, I have to admit, that's another level of technology that at 68, I'm probably not going to keep up with on a technical standpoint. You know, at some point, you just got to let it go. There's other things to do. Besides, we're going to talk about the JFK assassination in 2 weeks. That means reading 15 books. So, tonight, I'm blabbing. Tomorrow night, Jazz Shaw is going to be joining us. I think it's our third appearance on this program, but he goes way back to the radio shows and the podcasts. And he's always, I call him my brother from another mother because we have the exact same beat. We talk about conservative news analysis and UFOs, and that's what he writes about, both those things. So I'm sure we'll get some every time he's come on. I have to really give credit to some of our quote-unquote regulars. There's people we have on the show, and I actually talked to one of them about whether we should actually set up a separate page for them, but he said, no, just, you know, and I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, like I need more work, too. But there's several people we have on this show. We try to have them on about once every 6 weeks. David Strom is one, Jazz Shaw, Mark Tapscott from the Epoch Times. We like to have him on. He's always good for every single time we have these people on. Usually they break one piece of information that you can't get anywhere else. You know, so I don't know. We'll see what Jazz has tomorrow. Wednesday night. It's debate night. Yes, those fools are going to do it again, even though the polling in the Republican Party says they should just can this, and they should. Jeff Meyer was going on about that. He's been joking about this for weeks. You know, are we actually going to do this debate? Yeah, I guess we are. I mean, it's like it's 48 hours ahead of time. They haven't canceled yet. So it's not going to be on NBC. And this debate, which kind of screws us up, well, maybe not, but it's starting an hour earlier than the previous two, so it's actually going to start at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, which means it'll be done by 9 p.m. Central, which means we'll start our show. We're going to go live once again with the panel as soon as it's done, and that looks like that's going to be 9 p.m. Central instead of 10, or 10 p.m. Eastern. That's what it looks like right now. Panelists are going to be Tim Conaway, a presidential candidate in his own right, Don Sorrell. He was here for the Halloween show. People love him. He's a lovable guy. Even though we can't reveal his identity and we can't tell you what he does for a living, we can't. He's off assassinating people somewhere. That's all I know. And Jeff Meyer from Claw News is going. That's the panel for that. Thursday, I'm taking Thursday off. I got to go to a funeral. And that's what happens when you're 68 years old. People start dying at a higher and higher rate. Yeah, it's awful. I am going to the funeral of a guy who I grew up next door to, and it's sad to see him go. But so I'm going out of town for that, which is the reason there's not going to be a show. So anyway, yeah. So that's what we got going on over here. Once again, you can call me at that webpage. You can send me a text or a voicemail at this number, 408-458-5088. I don't look at either one of them while we're on the air. And I don't look at the show chats on the various platforms we're on while I'm on the air either. And people give me crap for this. I do not care. I'm 68. I need to concentrate. I don't need any distraction. And besides, here's my thing with that. You want to talk to me? Call. I'm serious. We'll put you, you know. I'm not going to make any bones about this. We've been doing this now for about 47, 48 times. Yeah, people have called, but not many. And, okay, our viewership isn't that high, especially for the live shows. We get a pretty good on playback, on demand, we get pretty good viewership, considering the fact we've been doing this only 3 months. But on the live shows, we don't have a lot of people tuning in. That's true. But that said, you know, I'm trying to bust a new paradigm here. We're Talkers Magazine says we're the first talk show in the United States to actually take video phone calls. So we're trying our hard. We're trying our best, man. That's what we're doing. So you should call me, because I'll talk to you about, also, there's the other thing. I'll talk to you about absolutely anything. You don't have to talk about the news. You don't have to talk about what I'm talking about. Here's the deal. You don't even have to be watching the show. If you just want to bookmark that page and call me, you know, at 11:30 at night, you know, I mean, this show lasts at least an hour every night, at least an hour, other than the nights we're not broadcasting. And maybe I owe you an apology, too, because I just figured out that of the last, okay, so like I said, we've started our 11th week on the air. In the last 6 weeks, I think, half that time, for the last 6 weeks, other than one exception, we've missed at least one show every week for something, you know. But what can I tell you? This is my retirement job. Like I said, I got to go to a funeral. You know, I feel important. I feel those things are important. You have to, you know, funerals, weddings, you know, when people need help, you got to show up. I know, I just do, you know. It's like, I mean, I bitch about this a lot, and I'm going to continue to do so, you know. Social networking doesn't cut it. And in the long run, considering everything, I personally think social networking has done more harm than good. Now, it does do some good. I know that's true. I know it's true. Like my wife, for example, is on Facebook mostly to follow her family. Okay, it's great for that. You know, now the problem with Facebook, of course, is that they know every goddamn fucking thing about you. So they can pinpoint products that they think you want. And goddamn it, they're damn good at it. And that's one of the reasons that the advertising on Facebook is works so well and is so relatively cheap. And that's the reason Mark Zuckerberg has 7 houses or whatever it is. I don't know. But you gotta pay attention to this shit. And when I mean shit, I mean real people in a real room. Social networking doesn't cut it. I'll tell you what really doesn't cut it, and I know I'll bitch about this before. I'm going to continue to bitch about this. TikTok. You know, okay, the U.S. services are bad enough. Hell, Elon Musk got on with Joe Rogan last week, and I talked about this last week too, but I'm going to mention it again. He said that when he bought Twitter and actually got in there and looked around, he said it was essentially a state-sponsored news organization. He said it was so aligned with not only the Democratic Party, but the Democratic administration that was currently in power, that he said it was essentially imperceptible from an independent source. That's scary. That's really, really scary. So we got that. That's bad enough in the United States. Now, in the United States, of course, we have freedom of speech. The government cannot curtail speech, but a private corporation can, because it's their thing. And when you're on Twitter, you know, you may think you have freedom of speech. You don't. Twitter can do anything they want because they own your ass. They own the platform. You know, so, and there's people have tried to come up with open source platforms. There's Mastodon and a couple others, you know, but generally they haven't caught on so far. So we got a bad enough problem with the stuff here in the United States. TikTok's owned by China. No, not a company in China, although technically it is, but that company is run by the Chinese Communist Party. TikTok is owned by China. So you're going to get on there, you're going to, not only now are you, you know, giving away your information for free, and then you're wondering why the hell you're deluged so much ads wherever you go, and your phone doesn't fucking work. Now, China has your information. That's great. That's fantastic. Country with 1.6 billion people. Like they need your information, but apparently they do. You know, I'm joking about this a little bit, but it actually does really concern me, and it actually really pisses me off. You should not be on that. If you're a patriot, you should not be on that platform. I know that patriot for a lot of people is a cold word for conservative, but that's not how I mean it in this thing. If you love your country, if you like the United States, you should not be on TikTok. And I don't care what you fucking think. And so this brings me to one of my top topics today. God, I'm so good at the segue, it's unbelievable. So I don't have to tell you that over the last weekend, there have been countless protests at countless cities, not just in the United States, but all over the world, against Israel. And in the vast majority of instances, it's anti-Semitism. It has nothing to do with Hamas and even nothing to do with the Palestinians. Most of it is just hatred of Jews. That's all there's to it. People are looking for an excuse to hate Jews, you know? But what's really amazing is how this has caught on in college campuses. That's the real incredible thing. These stupid fucking kids, and I'll call them that because that's what they are. And so, you know, my wife, and I don't know about you guys, I don't know how old you are. You know, my wife looks at me and says, Jim, you're just another old curmudgeon. Every single generation has bitched about the generation coming up. No, this is different. And David Strom brought this up in our conversation on Thursday, and he's absolutely right. This is different because when do you remember being in college where people were actually advocating for terrorism and genocide? They weren't just bitching about, like, the food in the cafeteria, you know, or, you know, whether they could have gay sex in the dormitories, you know, none of that. They're actually talking about actually hurting people. And that we crossed a line there. And these campuses, the kids on these campuses, they are doing this. And the thing is, and this is another one of my talking points today, too. David Strom and I talked about this, too. I've been thinking about this all weekend since Thursday. I live here, and, you know, Strom actually lives in Minneapolis, too. He lives in a different neighborhood than I do. I both live and work in Northeast Minneapolis. My home, we have a separate studio here, an office, but my home is very close by. I live in this district. This district is represented by Ilhan Omar. Now, the thing about Ilhan is I have no problem saying this. She's a known anti-Semite. She hates Jews. And the reason I know that, not necessarily because of anything she said in Congress, although she has said some terrible things, and apparently this is a true story, that when she was elected to Congress, but before she went that January, and what year is that? I don't know, 2008, 2009? I can't remember. Before she went, there's a bunch of clergymen of various religions here in Minneapolis that sat down with her and said, look, you gotta cut this anti-Semitic shit out. This is not going to fly at a national level. And she politely listened to them and nodded and said, yeah, we'll do. And of course, and she didn't, you know. But my point is, this is one of the most extremely liberal districts in the entire United States. So all my friends and all my family, with only a couple of very, very small exceptions, are all liberals. And people know I do this show. And I'm constantly asked, constantly told, you know, people, okay, let me give you two examples. Hold it, just a second. I got to check what I did here. So, all right, I got two examples here. It just happened this weekend. Somebody asked me, Jim, why are Republicans trying to ban the study, the social studies of white supremacy in high school? Well, we're not. What we're trying to ban is critical race theory. And everybody says, oh, that's bullshit. That's just bullshit, you know? All right, so here's another thing. There's another thing somebody asked me this weekend. Jim, why are Republicans trying to ban books in schools? Have you seen those books? You know, you'll say, what are you trying? You're trying to ban books in school libraries. Yeah, because they're porn, that's why. And the thing is, and this is what Strom was talking about, it's just so, he's more eloquent than I am, at least when he writes anyway. I'm a pretty good talker. when you show people what these things are they're trying to ban for school libraries, people don't believe it. And this has happened numerous times on the floor of congressional committees. You know, John Kennedy, he's become famous for doing this, that he will read from some of these books that the liberals are complaining about the fact that conservatives are trying to ban. And he gets shut down because it's too profane, it's too obscene to read in Congress. He can't do it. They won't let him. And so apparently it's okay for a 10-year-old kid to read that, but congressmen can't hear that through their little tiny little puffy ears, snowflake ears. Is that what's going on? The problem is when I try to tell, and I've given up. I don't even bother to bring this up anymore. When I try to tell my liberal friends where things are at, they just say, "Oh no, you're just exaggerating. You're just, you know, the conservatives or Republicans, you guys are just making that shit up." Well, the problem is we're not. And the real problem is the left, and I'm talking about the far left here, and that's another thing I want to get to in a second. It's like how 20% of the Democratic Party took over the Democratic Party. Somebody should write a book about that. But the hard left has figured out that if they do shit that's completely, totally outrageous, you know, like literally over the line, nobody believes they're doing it. It's like, because the thing is like, well, no, nobody would do that. No sane adult person would ever do that. You know, that's the thing. You know, now I'm going to turn this around to an example that isn't true, but my point is, under my things, it could be, and that is that whole Pizzagate thing with Hillary Clinton and apparently that stupid pizza joint in New Jersey where supposedly QAnon was started, supposedly. Now, that's not true, but the thing is, it's outrageous enough so that it's the type of thing they're actually doing. They're doing completely outrageous stuff, and then because they expect nobody will believe it, and nobody actually does. Nobody believes it. It's crazy. So what's happened on college campuses, you know, William Ayers, this goes back to like the 1960s and 70s, you know, William Ayers was one of the members of the Weather Underground. He served time in prison. I think they killed a police officer, I think it was. I think that's what it was. And he got out and, you know, promptly got a job as a college professor. He's been a college professor ever since, which I just find absolutely hilarious. Apparently, it boosts your cred as a college professor to serve time in prison. He said, you know, you don't understand. We're gonna change the world through these kids. We are going to indoctrinate. He actually said this. This is like 50 years ago. We're going to indoctrinate them, and we will change the world through your children. He's talking to the public now. He's talking to parents. And that's what happened. And nobody believed it was happening. In some ways, some people still don't believe it. But you look on campus, these college campuses now, all over the United States, you know, they're getting hundreds and some instances thousands of kids who are shouting death to Israel and kill the Jews. And it's gotten to the point where it's almost become violent. In many instances, I mean, they've arrested single individuals who apparently have tried to hurt Jewish students. But I mean, it has not gotten into a mob thing yet. Well, as far as the hurt, the actual physical violence, the protests definitely have. And so, yeah, so you're wondering how did that happen? Well, that's how it happened, and nobody believed it. Nobody believed it was happening. Nobody believed it would, you know, especially because. Well, you know, and there's another thing going on here, too, and I hate to point to you, dear viewer, and I'm not pointing to you specifically. I'll point to my generation, the baby boomers. We were really, really bad parents on the whole. On the whole. You know, I'm making a grand generalization. We were really bad parents. So we decided we wanted to be our kids' friends. Oh, shut up. Your kid doesn't need a friend from you. Your kid has friends, and you have friends. You don't need to be, I tell you what, wait till your kid's 25 or 30, then become their friend. Try that. You know, they don't need a friend in the meantime, you know. And so we basically have coddled these children, and now first of all, they're all pussies. Completely. It doesn't matter, man, woman, gay, straight, it doesn't matter. They're all completely soft. They can't imagine any sort of hardship whatsoever. They've grown up in the most affluent country in the world, and this is a part where affluence is going to kill our society, because if anything, the least bit problematic goes off the rails, these kids won't be able to handle it at all. And my wife will say, Jimmy, you're just an old curmudgeon. Your parents' generation said the same thing about us. Yeah, but this is different. And there's another thing that I've always pointed to, too, when people say that. Test scores. Test scores have been going down in high school and college steadily for the last 30 years. They just keep going lower and lower and lower. I mean, they changed the SATs, what, about 10 years ago? Because the scores were historically at historic lows. They changed it to make the scores look better. And amazingly, even that didn't help. They didn't. They rejiggered it so that it would look like the scores are better than they were, and even that didn't help. It's these kids. There's a Branko cartoon that's been going around this last weekend, where a high school kid, approaches his teacher who has all this Death to Israel, all this gay pride stuff, all in her classroom. And he looks at the teacher and says, "When are you going to teach us math?" Yeah, that's what I think too. Well, people say, we can teach about social justice and mathematics at the same time. Actually, no, you can't. There's only so much time in the day. So if teaching one takes away from the other. It's as simple as that. So yeah, I commiserate with David Strong because he lives in the same city I do. It's not the same neighborhood, but we live pretty close. It's the same. Minneapolis, like most major cities, is a very, very liberal city. And there's this another thing that's really kind of weird that's happened over the last 2,000 years. Even the Romans noticed that people who live in close proximity to one another, in other words, in high population density areas, have a tendency to be more liberal. They noticed that in Rome 2,000 years ago. I know theories that have been propagated why that is, but I don't know a single person has actually figured out the real definitive reason why. And it's very, very odd. And of course, this is the very reason we have that electoral college. That is the reason. The founding fathers knew this, and that was the safeguard. When the Constitution was enacted, ratified in 1792, there were 15 million people in the 13 states, what then became the states of the United States. And there were two major cities, New York and Boston. And the fear was, what they were trying to avoid is the fact there were so many people in those two population centers that, like, if somebody was really well known in New York City and ran for office, they were trying to avoid the fact where that person could, like, win office for, like, let's say the presidency, and no one else in the country would even know who they were. That's the reason we have the Electoral College, for that very reason. And by getting rid of it, you negate all that. And, of course, the thing is that gives the Democrats an advantage. Because if you're going to count, I mean, did you see the map from 2016 for the Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump? I mean, it's generally completely red, except for a few dots of blue. Those dots of blue are all the major cities in the United States. Because, you go to Pennsylvania, there's two major cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, right? And there's a bunch of farmland. But the thing is, in those two little dots, there's way more people than the rest of the farmland. Way more. And this is true nationwide. So you can look at that and say, holy shit, my God. It's like, we captured almost everything. Well, no, you haven't. And that's the reason we have the Electoral College. And, like, try explaining this to somebody. It's like, my mother, bless her heart, she says, it's not democracy. One vote, every person should get a vote. Every vote should count. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's a reason. The founding fathers were unbelievably prescient. It's unbelievable. I mean, they thought of, the only single thing they never thought of was it never occurred to them that anybody would want to make a full-time living, like, for example, serving in Congress. That was anathema to them. They could not imagine it. Why you do that? The idea was you maybe made a little money, and then you went to Congress, you ran for Congress, you went to Congress for a few years, and you came back home. You came back home to the farm and made more money. That was the idea. And now we have a president who's never had a real job. I think like 1 year, We have a former president who never had a real job, exactly 1 year. He was in corporate law for exactly 1 year. He met his wife there. I'm talking about Obama now. You know, these people have never worked. And then you have the current past president who worked his entire life, and that's the reason. So they don't want him to be there. That's the reason. He's not an insider. And so a poll came out this weekend, New York Times Siena poll, New York Times poll. And according to the poll, Donald Trump is completely kicking Joe Biden's ass, totally. If the election were today, it would be a landslide. Trump would win easily. Somebody at Fox News figured out it would probably be, he'd probably get more than 300 electoral votes. And so they're just in panic mode. So they send David Axelrod out, who is in many ways, Barack Obama's right-hand man. And he says the quiet part out loud, he says that maybe Biden should consider not running. And this is the most direct attack to Biden running that we've seen. So now we know they don't want him to run. That's what we know. And of course they don't want him to run. He's going to lose, you know. But that whole thing's a shit show too. So the thing is, so now with the Israeli war going on, you have Rashida Tlaib gets up in front of, she does a TikTok video, fucking TikTok. She does a fucking TikTok video. And she tells the president, you know, we're going to remember this come election time next year. But the real problem is there's two ways to look at that. Every poll has shown the vast majority of the public is with Israel, the American public. You know, that those people that you see in all those demonstrations, they're still a minority. That's actually the reason they have to demonstrate. That they want to make themselves look bigger than they really are. They're hoping that you will watch the TV and think, holy shit, look at all the people who are supporting Palestine. No. There's a lot of people supporting Palestine. There's way more people supporting Israel. That's the thing. It's not even close. But on the other hand, in terms of Democratic voting, there might be enough people that will bolt from that could really, really kill Biden, really kill him really bad. You know, I mean, none of the numbers look good for him already. I mean, if he loses, like, you know, 10 or 20% of the youth vote, I mean, shit, you know. And, of course, they know this. They're panicking. The other thing that came out this weekend is really interesting. It does appear that maybe Republicans and conservatives has answered the question, who is pulling the strings for the Biden administration behind the scenes? And it does now appear that maybe it is Barack Obama. That just because of stuff that's happened the last few days, the last week or so, since this war, basically, and the fact that he's kind of, I wouldn't say he's come out of retirement, but he's become way more visible. He's saying politic talk shit, where basically he's talking out two sides of his mouth, that sort of thing. And with this thing about pushing Axelrod out there, and I saw Axelrod was actually on NBC talking about this. It was plainly obvious this was not coming off the top of his head. I mean, you know, the thing with politicians is the vast majority of them are really, really bad actors. You know, and me, I've spent my entire life in entertainment. I can spot a bad actor a mile away, even somebody who's subtle about it. And Axelrod's talking, and it's plainly obvious the words aren't his own. You know, it's like he's trying to fudge it. And he doesn't. The other thing, it was also obvious to me, he didn't want to do it. That too. He also didn't want to actually be saying that shit, because he knows that then now the liberal guns will be pointed at him, some of him. But Biden's really, really within a rock and a hard place here. I mean, he really is. It's like, first of all, he's completely inept. So there's that. Nothing's going well. I'm going to give the president some credit here. Try to be fair. The only two things that haven't blown up in his face are Ukraine, and so far, even though it's only been like 2-3 weeks, this Israeli war. They're threading the needle on this. I think both those things are eventually going to blow up, especially the Israeli part, the Israeli war thing. I don't know. Ukraine. It looks like we're on another. highway to hell to another endless war. That's what it looks like. It's like they're just chewing up money hand over fist. 100,000 Ukrainians have died. There doesn't seem to be any end in sight to this. And yeah, it does seem like something that people are just going to be fighting. They're going to fight and fight and fight. And then you wonder once again about what Dwight Eisenhower, what was he, the 35th president of the United States, said 2 weeks before he left office. He said, "We must beware of the military-industrial complex." This is from a general, a guy who spent his entire career in the military, and he's looking in the camera and telling you, you have to be aware of the military-industrial complex. Okay, all right. I think you probably know what you're talking about. You know? And so, yeah, now, yeah, and that's what we've had ever since, you know? And the other difference between what's going on now and what's going on 50 years ago, and this is an important point, and Strom and I were talking about this on Thursday night, too, about the fact that it's history now generally agrees that the college kids who were protesting the Vietnam War were right, that it was a pointless war. Like, you know, like Strom was talking about, there was the famous domino effect that Nixon was talking about. He said, well, if Vietnam falls, the entire Southeast Asia is going to go communist. And, of course, that didn't happen. And as soon as we pulled out, Vietnam did fall. It did. It went communist as soon as we pulled out. But the rest of it didn't. The domino theory was proved false. And it's basically, we fought a war and lost 55,000 soldiers for nothing. Nothing was accomplished, you know, where... here I can say, you know, I can safely say right now, even 3 weeks into this, that the college kids are wrong. You can't, you know, so Israel is just sitting there minding their own business. And yeah, okay. And I know this, I know the backstory on this, you know, that in 1948, they drove the Palestinians off their land. I understand that. Here's the problem with that. That may be true. It's too late. You know, it's like people in America are saying, you know, that we have to give them land back to the Native American Indians. No, you know why? It's too late, you know? All right, let's try this for an example. Let's say, I don't know what country would do it. Let's say some country got in a bunch of boats and came over to New Jersey and literally tried to take the state of New Jersey by force, because Israel is about the same size as New Jersey. Let's say that happened, okay? So what would the response of the U.S. government be? The military would probably be there in about 2-3 hours. And we would bomb the shit out of these people. In other words, it wouldn't happen. And let's say they even waited a week. Okay, a week. But 5 years? 10 years? Now you got 50 years? No. There's a timing to human events. And it's hard to know when to draw the line. But at some point, it's too late. This is why we have laws about... the statute of limitations of the United States. This is also one of the things, and I really, you know, this is the type of shit that gets me in trouble. I don't really care. I don't, because it really bears repeating. There's some states where there's no statute of limitations on rape. There is none. Of course, there's none on murder anywhere. You know, if they find out 50 years after you killed somebody that you did it, you're still going to jail. But in some states, they don't have a statute of limitations on rape. This is one of the reasons in New York State that this woman, I can't remember her name, she's like a former writer or something, accused Donald Trump of raping her in a dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman in Manhattan 30 years ago. I mean, that just went to trial. And she says this happened 30 years ago. No, I'm sorry. That's too late. You know, and there's another problem here too, ladies. You know, if you get raped, you got to tell somebody. We can't read your mind. We can't know. You have to tell somebody. And the thing is, the thing about the fact, well, I might lose my job or something like that, that doesn't cut it. Also, the other thing, no one would believe me. Well, it doesn't matter. You still have to do it. I mean, I hate to say this. I have lost jobs from doing the right thing. You just got to do it. Your world will recover. It will recover better than you just sitting on the information. Because now you got a rapist out there going around. Who knows who else he's raped? You know, it's this Harvey Weinstein syndrome. Nobody spoke up. Everybody knew. Everybody in the entertainment business knew this guy was doing this. Everybody. I did. And I'm not even Hollywood anymore. It's like I knew he was doing it. And nobody spoke up. Nobody did, you know? Well, yeah, well, you just can't. Now, I don't know what it is. I assume in California, it's the same thing. You know, some of this, the rapes he's been accused of committing happened many, many years ago. But there's a certain time into human events. And then also, I need to bring up the best example of this at all, Brett Kavanaugh. So Christine Blasey Ford said that that Brett Kavanaugh raped her when he was 16 years old, 40 years ago? Oh, go to hell. You know, first of all, it's pretty obvious now she was lying. Even if she wasn't, it's too late. There has to be some hastiness to these events in some fashion. There does. So, you know, and so how did I even get started talking about this? What was I talking about? Jesus, this is terrible. Some political thing. But at any rate, yeah, you can't just wait and expect things to turn out okay. You just can't. Yeah, I don't know. No, I've never been raped, but I have had other things, unpleasant things happen to me, and I have pointed out when people haven't believed me or I have lost my job for doing that. That's happened. Yeah, but I don't care. I don't, you know, you don't believe me, you know, and not only that, people, you know, you think people won't believe you. You'd be surprised who will. I mean, it's so, you know, if that's really happened to you. The only weird thing about this, and this applies to the Donald Trump case and some of the others in the news, and once fame and or money are involved, all hell kind of breaks loose. You know, like a friend of mine was really mad at me. She said, "How can you not believe the women?" She said, "You know, it's a known fact that 97% of the time the women aren't lying." And yeah, that was my response to that. Yes, that's true, unless fame or money are involved. Like, I'll give you an example. Bill Cosby. There's like 50 women who have accused Bill Cosby of rape. Now, people are going to get really mad at me, but I'm guessing based on what I know about both about the human psyche and the entertainment business, about half of those women are probably lying. I don't know which half. And also, that means two dozen of them aren't. And so he's still a serial rapist. You know, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't do any of this shit. I'm not saying that at all. But my guess is roughly half of those women are lying because they want to get on the gravy train of getting money, or they simply like the attention of the publicity or whatever it is. But that's like when fame and or money are involved, people do strange things. But the woman who works at the Safeway down the street as a cashier, if she says her ex-boyfriend raped her, she's almost certainly telling the truth. That's the way I look at this. So, all right. Let's check the outline. What do we got going on? So, in Connecticut, a judge threw out the results of a Democratic primary there, election, because there was significant evidence that the Democrats cheated. Now, I have talked about this many, many times. I have no evidence that Joe Biden or the Democratic Party cheated the 2020 presidential election. No, I should know, and I said that wrong. I have no proof. I do have evidence. I have credible evidence, but I have no proof. And this is another thing, and this was not the point I was trying to make, but still, it bears repeating the discussion about the fact that, you know, if you think you've been cheated in a presidential election with the first week of November, you basically have to the first of the year to prove it somehow. If you can't prove it after the first of the year, when a new Congress is seated, and also usually the electoral ballot count happens in Congress around the second or third week of January, if you know that you're screwed, it's too late. You know, now for those of you who think that I'm just some sort of biased bastard here. There's good evidence to indicate the Republicans cheated in 2000, 2004. Very good evidence. Once again, no proof, but there's evidence. And also, It's pretty much agreed by historians now that, now I can't even say the Democrats, and I can't even say Kennedy, because it was specifically his father, Joseph Kennedy, probably cheated the 1960 presidential election so his son John Kennedy could win. And the way that happened, that you can look this up, it's still to this day, both in electoral count and popular vote, one of the closest elections in U.S. history. So what happened is that Joe Kennedy paid off a bunch of people in Cook County, that's Chicago, to change the vote count. And the vote was so close nationwide that changing the vote count in Cook County changed the count in the state of Illinois and changed the state Illinois' electoral count, and that changed the election. That's how close it was. Changing the, so he bribed officials in one single county, apparently, and that was enough to change the whole thing. That's how close it was. Now, this is really interesting because it isn't brought up very often, but the 2020 election with Biden was also very close. It was very close. I don't know if it was close in terms of electoral count, but it was very close in terms of the actual vote count, especially in the battleground states. There were five states where the count was, I think it was, they were in five states that were within 30,000 votes or something like that. I know in one state, it was either Wisconsin or Arizona, it was within 10,000 votes. So I personally think this happens much more than people think it will. You know, everyone says, oh, it was a clean election. You know, you're just an election denier. No, this is not only it's happened before. In 2000, 2004, it's been alleged that the Republicans cheated by actually messing with the computer tabulations. It was a computer thing. It was a software thing that they messed with. There's a very interesting thing here because the best written account of this I found is in Jesse Ventura's book, American Conspiracies. Now, all right, I don't know, a lot of people think Jesse Ventura is laughable, but there's this one, he devotes one chapter of his book to this, and the problem, if you want to call it a problem, is that he names places, people, dates, and times so in such detail that either it's true, or he made the whole, or somebody made the whole fucking thing up. There's no real, it's so detailed, there's no real leeway for error. He names people, and then the thing he points out in there is that people in Congress did kind of catch on to this, and they were going to have hearings in Congress about it, and supposedly the Republican, the guy that the Republican hired as a computer mastermind to do this, the day before he was supposed to appear before Congress, he died in a helicopter crash. How convenient, you know? Now, Richard Belzer, who wrote the book Hit List, about, you know, Belzer was a huge conspiracy theorist, and I'm sad he died. I would have loved to have had him on the show. You know, his big thing was the JFK assassination. He's absolutely convinced without a shadow of a doubt that not only did Oswald not act alone, but Oswald probably wasn't even involved. He would just happen to be there. He was the patsy. He was the designated patsy. But Belzer said that of the 300 people or so that were in Dealey Plaza in Dallas when the shots were fired, of those 300 or so people, 78% of them died within 5 years of the assassination, most of them under relatively unusual circumstances. And he, in his book, Hit List, he actually has, he says, well, you know, people, he said it was, the chances of that happening are 16 trillion to one, if I'm right. But the thing is, he said, well, people flow these figures or these mathematical probabilities all the time. He published the actual formula they used to figure that out. It's actually published in the book, you know. For those of you who like higher math and don't have anything to do in an afternoon, you can sit down and go through it, you know. And he, you know, that's true. What happened in Dealey Plaza is a huge leap of probability. And this happens all over the place. You know, you're talking about all these, you know, people say, well, the government is going to kill people. Well, here's the deal. Once again, I have no proof the government's ever killed anybody or, you know, for a conspiratorial purpose to shut people up. You know, obviously the military kills people, you know, obviously. But the U.S. government has never killed American citizens. I have no proof of this at all. But, man, there's a lot of really, really shady shit. And you go down, it's like, for example, I've been reading about this, about all the people. There's an article, if you want to check it out. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what, I'll put a link on this in our blog, on Mysterious Universe, of all the supposed UFO investigators who have died under mysterious circumstances over the last 40, 50 years. There's an article about it. And, man, some of these things are, it's like they're really, really coincidental. And once again, it's like it happens like before somebody's supposed to testify or so, you know, it's like, you know, really, seriously, you wonder. And then I've told you the story about Phil Schneider and I think it's Brent Swanser wrote this article, and he ends with Phil Schneider's story. So Phil Schneider is probably the weirdest story ever. And I don't, you know, whether you believe this or not, I don't know if I believe it either. But the thing is, it's a freak. Well, there is one thing that we absolutely know for a fact, and that is Schneider's dead. That happened in 1997, if I'm right. So the thing is, so here's Phil Schneider's story. He's a geologist for the U.S. military, not the government, the military. And the reason they need geologists is because they put in underground bases. And apparently they put them in all over the place. This is pretty much an open secret at this point. Especially the western U.S. is filled with underground military bases. They're all over. The government even owns a patent on a drilling machine, believe it or not, on a boring machine to do it. So when they're going to do this, they need to send a geologist down there to look at what kind of, his specific job was to find out what kind of rock they were dealing with so that he could actually fine-tune the amount and type of explosive they were going to use. If they needed to use explosives, and usually they do. So he's in Dulce, New Mexico. Now, there already was, and at least he says this, but this has been pretty much acknowledged also, too. There already was an underground military base in Dulce, New Mexico. They're going to dig underneath it. They're going to add to it. That's what he says. So they put him in a cage and drop him down into a hole so he can look at this rock. That's his job, right? So he goes down into the hole, and he says, who's meeting him at the bottom but 3 7-foot-tall gray aliens? And he says he panicked. He said he just it scared the shit out of him, and he carried a gun with him to shoot little vermin, to shoot little animals in case they were, you know, attacked him or anything like that. And his knee-jerk reaction is he pulled out his gun, he shot one of them, and he said he killed him instantly. And all hell broke loose. The Marines were down there. Then you have aliens shooting at Marines or Marines shooting at aliens. And he claims, and this is a really weird thing, because you can see there's video of him talking, giving lectures on YouTube. You can find him. Because his claim is that an alien used a ray of some type to actually, he said open him like a fish is the way he said, but specifically it cut off fingers on his one hand. All the 4 fingers on his one hand were cut off. Now, okay, you can say, well, you can do that with a table saw, you know, but you got to see what his injury looked really, really weird. It's like his finger, the tips of his fingers had melted off. This is the part that where I, you know, I'm pretty skeptical. I know you don't believe this, but I really am. I hear this, 95% of the UFO shit I hear is bullshit. It's just bullshit, you know. But so, you know, and I thought this was bullshit until I saw his injury. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that ever. And I never have. I know friends who have cut fingers off table saws. I know that. I have friends who have done that. I've seen that before. It's like, no, that did not look that way. And it didn't. So he found out later that there was, he said, now once again, this is him talking. He says he found out later that there was an underground alien base underneath military, the U.S. military base in Dulce, that it was underneath there. And apparently the military was not aware of this. He said they weren't aware until supposedly 60 people got killed. 60 American soldiers got killed in the shootout. And it was all hell just break loose. And then the government, supposedly, according to him, the government has to talk to the aliens to figure out what's going on. They're clueless. They're completely clueless. It's a very, very unbelievable story. But at any rate, he said, this is Phil Schneider talking, he did a lot of lectures, presentations over the course of his life after that. Because he said it was plainly obvious the government was not going to tell the public, and he thought that was wrong. So he said, he ended a lot of his lectures telling people, he said, if something ever happens to me, just remember this, I did not commit suicide. He said, I've already had, like he said, he had 11 friends that he worked with in the military that were killed because of what they knew or what they were saying, and they made it look like suicide. He said, I assure you, I'm never going to kill myself. If I end up dead, I did not commit suicide. Well, Phil Schneider ended up dead, and he ended up dead in what looked like it was staged as a episode of autoerotic asphyxiation. You know, when people actually try to they throttle their oxygen intake so that they can have a better orgasm. You know, literally, this is the thing. You can look it up if you don't know. It was staged as that, but the people have seen the autopsy photos say there's no way in hell. There's knots you can't tie on yourself. Your hands aren't free to do it. And everyone said this is a completely staged. It was people who know things about knots and this sort of thing say this was completely staged. And they get this from his autopsy photos and the crime scene photos are public. So, you know, I mean, and like I said, he was going around telling people, I'm not going to commit suicide, and then he commits suicide, supposedly. And that's the most dramatic, in this article, that's the most dramatic example they have. But I know, we're going to have a guy on the show in January named Stan Gordon. And I'm hoping Stan talks about his friend, I can't remember his friend's name, who worked at the radio station at Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. All right, I'm going to tell that story too. So, in December 1965... a strange thing crashed outside the woods of a small town in Kecksburg, which I'm right, is southwest of Pittsburgh, I think like 30 or 40 miles. It's beyond being a suburb. It's a very small town. It still is. And the people there, they said, they went into the woods and saw this thing and said it basically looked like a giant acorn. It was a steel craft that looked like an acorn, or kind of very roughly like a Gemini capsule, kind of, not really, but and it was kind of sort of that had that shape. It had weird hieroglyphic writings on it. About 20 locals saw it, and it was amazing. The military showed up within like 2 hours. They obviously knew where this thing crashed. So they shooed everybody away. It appears, although no one ever actually saw underneath the tarp, that they put it on a flatbed truck, put a tarp over it, and carried it off away. Well, there's a reporter. Stan Gordon was a teenager when this happened. He ended up devoting his life to UFOs and Bigfoot, believe it or not. But there's a guy who worked at the local radio station there who apparently found out some insider information. He found out exactly what this thing was. And and this is 1965 when local radio was still a big deal, even in small towns. I mean, you could put stuff on local radio in a small town and we broadcast everywhere. Here's another example of that. In Roswell, when that supposed flying saucer crashed, the 501 bomber group, the Roswell Airfield, they put out a press release saying we have a flying saucer. And that press release was issued to the local Roswell newspaper, and Roswell only had like 10,000 people in it. But that newspaper, because of the AP, that press release went out all over the world within hours, if not minutes. So it's the same thing kind of with radio. In 1965, if you put something on local radio, if it was important or nothing, it got disseminated everywhere. So he was doing a documentary on what exactly this thing was. And he says, and it wasn't just him, there's a secretary at the radio station said she confirmed this. She saw it. Two guys from supposedly, quote unquote, from the government came in, took him into a studio. She said she saw the conversation but couldn't hear it because it's in a soundproof room, and basically belittled him, and he pulled his documentary. So that's in 1965. And apparently his wife said he was completely despondent and he never talked about this thing ever. Well, around, I think it's 1969, he started to tell friends. He decided he was going to come, he's going to come public with it after all. And lo and behold, just as he made that decision, his car got driven off, got pushed off the road, and he died in an auto accident, a single auto accident. It wasn't even hit or run driver. I don't know if somebody saw it, but apparently his car was forced off the road by another car, and he died. Yeah. Well, what are the chances of that happening? Who knows? Oh, man. Once again, I can talk, man. Holy shit. Well, what did we discover today? Okay, the government is killing witnesses. We've discovered that, right? Obama's running the Biden White House. We discovered that. And let me see, what else? Unless they cheat the election again, Trump is going to win. But here's another thing too, and I want to bring this up. This is very important, and the thing about Kennedy in 1960 kind of confirms this. You can't cheat an election if it's not going to be close. It's both hard to do, and also people start to wonder about it. Like, for example, I said that the Republicans maybe cheated the 2000-2004 election. They didn't do it in 2008 because it was so widely known, assumed that Barack Obama was going to beat John McCain. They thought they'd get caught, and they didn't try it. And that's probably the same thing. If it looks like somebody's going to blow somebody out, then no one's going to try this. And also, it only works if it's, it depends, you know, it doesn't matter how you do it. I mean, supposedly, well, first of all, there's no doubt about this in 2020. It's like, it's the difference between cheated and rigged. I would say they rigged the election because at least a dozen states, and maybe depending on how you count, maybe 17 of them, unconstitutionally changed their election laws, supposedly, ostensibly to accommodate COVID. You know, well, no, that's bullshit. You know, because it's really, you know, the reason I brought this thing up about this election in Connecticut being cheated, and I don't know if I ever said, but the reason they caught people stuffing ballot boxes outside, you know, the outside ballot boxes, the drop boxes, they caught people stuffing them, and so that's why the judge negated the election. But those drop boxes were all over the place; they were brand new. You know, who knows what the hell happened. And then, you know, Time magazine runs an article in January that says, no, we didn't cheat the election. We fortified it. Yeah, right. Okay, sure. But as I said, that's how they supposedly did it in 2020. In 2000, 2004, it was entirely computer shit. They were apparently, they were bouncing numbers out of computers. So, at any rate, why did I bring that up? Oh, if Trump's really blowing Biden out of the water that bad, they won't try it. They won't. So it's going to be interesting what happens over the next year. The election is 1 year from tomorrow. So, I don't know. I have no, you know, Mark Tapscott came on the show, Epoch Times. He basically knows everybody in Congress on a full name basis. He's 70 years old. It's been his beat for 40 years. He's quite certain they're going to replace Biden at some point. You know, he has said that. That's a scuttle he's heard. So we'll find out. Axelrod also brought this up. At this point, after this point, it might be very hard to do that. So if that's going to happen, it kind of has to happen fairly quick. People say they could wait till the convention, but I don't know. I don't know if that... You know, 40 years ago when there was no social media and no instant media, maybe you get away with that shit. I don't know if you could do it now. I don't. Anyway, tomorrow Jazz Shaw will be joining us. We'll talk to Jazz about this too. He always has a take. He talks to people too. He has his sources, so we'll see what he knows. And Wednesday, debate night, we're going to listen to that debate, that last debate. So we have the same panel on, and I got the feedback I got later is, you know, you guys did a pretty good job considering the fact you had nothing to work with, and we did it. It was like, you know, that debate was a snooze, and unfortunately, I think this one's going to be more of a snooze. This one's going to be even worse. I mean, it's pretty. I think America and Republicans pretty much know who the nominee is going to be. So I don't know. You know, I suppose at this point everybody's running for vice president. You tell me. So anyway, we'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same bat channel. Oh, Wednesday. Right after the debate, which means we'll probably be starting about an hour early. So instead of 11 p.m. Eastern, it's probably going to be 10. So we'll see what's going on. Anyway, I want to thank you folks for... Hold on. There's stuff I got to do on my own director. I want to thank you folks for watching. I really appreciate it. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you tomorrow night.